could have been, thinking I would know what the future bring, all the highs and lows. Said I'm gonna win, though the world might spin. Now I'm sitting here like I'm no one.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today, I'm going to talk to you guys about something that's kind of serious. And it has a negative connotation surrounding it, which I don't think it should. Today's podcast may be a little bit longer than normal because I think this is something that's pretty serious and it needs to be addressed, especially in times like right now. There's a lot of people struggling mentally with all kind of things, man, and COVID made that even worse because it pushed a lot more people into poverty, you know, unemployment and things like that. These different things add different stresses to you. So today I really want to talk about mental health and basically mental awareness because I don't think it's something that's highly talked about. I don't think people want to talk about it. I'm not sure why it's an issue for people to talk about mental health, but I'm going to get pretty graphic about some of my own experiences. So some of this stuff you might be interested in hearing and some of it you might be like, oh man, that was a bit much, but I don't share my story often. You know, my book coming out, I share bits and pieces of my life, how it was before and kind of how I got here now, but I definitely don't go into detail. And so this is what I'm going to do today, just, you know, about my ride through, well, my journey through life. And then, you know, me having my own experiences and talking to other people, you know, Hall of Famers, just general people that are in Hollywood. I've had, you know, different experiences with people in Hollywood, and you'd be amazed at the amount of people out here that are struggling, man, with mental health. I mean, it's probably not a big surprise in Los Angeles because of, you know, this is Hollywood, right? So people expect people to be out here doing drugs and all the other things, but they don't understand the foundation behind that. They think it's just because they might be stars or who knows. I don't know what people think about people who do drugs and why they do drugs or all of these different things. But the way the mind works, there's certain triggers that cause these things to happen. So today I want to address all of these things. Like I said, some of this stuff is going to get graphic. Some of my language today might not be, you know, something that you guys want to hear, but I think it needs to be talked about. So let's get to it. The first thing I want to talk about is anxiety and depression. I suffered from anxiety and depression for a long time. Matter of fact, I mean, not too many people know this. Some people that are close to me know this, but I mean, I tried to commit suicide when I was 15 and my mother caught me. My mother caught me in the kitchen. I had a butcher knife on my wrist because of just the stuff that I was going through, man. Like by the time I was by the time I was 10, I was so numb to life. I mean, so many deaths, man. I had two friends thrown through a windshield in a car accident, and they had their little sister in the car. The little sister was in a car seat. She was murdered instantly. And then one of my good friends was my classmate. I was in the fifth grade. She, you know, got killed instantly. And then my other friend, she was paralyzed. You know, she was super fast, man. They were talking about her being the next Jackie Joyner Kircher. She was so fast. And then that accident just, it made her paralyzed. And then eventually she was able to walk again. I found my grandfather dead maybe when I was like 6. I mean, I can keep going, you know. So just the neighborhood that I grew up in, I just remember playing with the little kid across the street that I used to play with all the time and playing with him. You know, we were hanging out. We came back home across the street. Like, we just walked across the street. It was literally that close. Walked across the street. And then maybe like 2 hours later, we hear a knock on the door. It's probably like 8:30. And my grandmother was like, you know, the type of neighborhood we lived in, you know, she was like, you can't ever open the door. But I think she was in the bathroom. I don't know where my uncle was because I grew up in the house. People don't know. I grew up in the house between my parents and my grandmother, because my parents are military, so they bounced around a lot. So I would have to stay with my grandmother for extended periods of time. And this is one of those times when I was there, I might have been 6 or 7. And back to the story, we playing with a little kid, came back home about 8:30. We hear a knock on the door. And so, you know, I ran to open the door. the lady just blows past me and goes in the house, and she has her hand on her neck. And I'm like, what is happening? And then she moved her hand, and like blood just started gushing out of her neck, just shooting out everywhere. So, you know, her boyfriend, which is not her kid's father, her boyfriend at the time, he slit her neck. He just cut her throat, and she ran across the street for one of us, you know, to get some help. And it was crazy, man. So my grandmother like rushed me and my brother into the room, called the ambulance. I think my uncle came home. The ambulance came and got the lady and took her to the hospital. And then my cousin came by the house probably 30 minutes after she got picked up and said, oh, yeah, they got him. They got him on Andrew Street, was a street that was like really bad in my neighborhood. It might have been probably the two blocks from where I lived. And he's like, oh, yeah, they got him. He didn't last long because that was just kind of how it was. That was just the neighborhood that I grew up in. And I mean, two houses down was my cousin's house. And it was a, you know, people know about trap houses or, you know, places where a lot of drugs happen. Two doors down, you know what I mean? And so we would play in the yard. And I think the first time I seen somebody, and we were super poor, like food stamps. I mean, my grandmother would rip food stamps in half and give one. I'm sorry, she would rip a dollar in half and give one to me and my brother, like the halves, and be like, you got to go to the same store in order to spend this. So it was that kind of neighborhood. And so my first time seeing somebody that had anything was a drug dealer from Florida. So I remember Florida, like, you know, the tag. I never forgot that because I was a kid. This dude had a mouth full of gold. He had a Lexus with some rims on it. He didn't even have gold. He had platinum in his mouth. And this was in like the 80s, you know, and I just remember this Florida tag because my dad was from Florida. So I knew his tag and I seen this. And I'm like, man, one day I'm going to get a car that nice. And I just remember that Florida tag. And I lived in Florida for, you know, a while. You know, many people know that that's where I lived before I came to Los Angeles. But so like these, by the time I was, you know, 10 or 11, I've had these kind of experiences, you know what I mean? And they just continued from that and got worse and worse. So like, I think we moved to Little Rock at some point in time because I bounced back and forth between my parents because they were military. So my dad was in Germany. My mom might've been in Jersey. So we bounced back and forth between them. And, you know, back then in the military, you only make about 20 grand trying to take care of two kids. And then my dad was kind of absent because he was just off, you know, he wasn't ready to have kids at the time, you know, so he was still living that life. He had a bunch of kids and he would come home on the weekends, you know, once a month or once every couple months and like beat us for things that we did 2 months before he got there because my mom had like thyroid issues and she was a single mother raising two kids. And so he would, you know, come home and try to be a parent or a father, as you say, you know, it's like, dude, you beat me for something I did 2 or 3 months ago. What is this? You don't come here. You don't come play catch with me. You don't come do anything. You know, you want to come in the house and start screaming and putting your hands on me for something that I did, you know, months ago. And so I might have been 8 at this time. So, you know, growing up in these kind of environments, I mean, I felt like I had an excuse to be aggressive and do the things that I did. And I think there's a disconnect out there in some of these communities and not understanding. And this is like people in these environments, you get on drugs or you start banking and you start doing so many different things. And like all these experiences were probably by the time I hit 12, not even probably they were, because when I hit 12, we moved to Little Rock, Arkansas. And Little Rock, Arkansas, people know that was like the murder capital of the world between 1991 and like 95. And that's where I was. That's where we went to school at. So I had a police escort to school. And in the seventh grade, you know, hop off the bus in the seventh grade, we had metal detectors, you know, all these things. I remember, you know, fast forward back before that, I remember my dad pulled a gun on the lady on the freeway because she, you know, he had real bad road rage. And so he pulled a gun on a lady. She slammed on brakes and called the police. My mom is in North Carolina doing some military training. And it was just my dad because he had retired. And then he finally came back and decided to live with us. And so he just had this anger, man. He had anger management issues. He's a lot better now. He's a pastor. But anyway, he pulls a gun on the lady. She slams on brakes in the middle of the freeway. She calls the police. My dad pulls up in the yard. And then out of nowhere, you know how you're a kid, you run up to the window. Matter of fact, I might have been, I don't want to talk about how young I am. I don't want to incriminate my parents. But anyway, I'm looking out the window. My dad pulls up. And then maybe 30 seconds later, man, like 10 police cars come out of nowhere. They, you know, chained my dad up from his hands to his ankles, threw him in the car, in the backseat of the police car, police knock on the door, like, you got somebody you can call, because we were in there by ourselves, man. And might have been like 11 or something like that. And so my mom was off, like I said, in North Carolina. So my dad had a friend that lived where we were in Florida at the time. And he came over to the house, you know, waited till the police left. And they were like, you going to stay here? He was like, yeah. I mean, but he had 3 or 4 kids of his own. And he lived kind of like 35, 40 minutes away. So he was like, well, you guys got it. You're right. We had been on our own, living at home on our own for a long time. My parents, like I said, my mom worked at night. And so my dad was off doing whatever he was doing. So me and my brother, probably from like 6 years old, were just at home in the house by ourselves, raising each other. You know, we had each other's back. And, you know, my mom would come home at like 2 or 3 in the morning. We would sleep in the bed, in her bed, and she would come in there and we would, you know, just hop into bed with us. But these are my experiences, right? These are my experiences. Then I get to Little Rock. And Little Rock was crazy. I mean, you can look up this. There was this HBO special called Banging in Little Rock. You can look it up. And it just, I was there during that time frame. Matter of fact, some of my friends were in the movie. It was an HBO special. And it was crazy, man. So I had issues, man. I think I had the right to have the issues. I think I had the right when I would turn 15 to want to try to kill myself because of all the things that was going on in my house. The way my dad was, he was a military drill sergeant. So he had that mentality. I don't think he was ready to be a father. So he just came home. And he would just be on some crazy stuff, man. And my mom would always be like, they're not in the military. They're not privates. You can't come in here and treat them like that. So, I mean, I had issues, man. There's more stories that I don't want to get into that happened between me and my dad. But just know I didn't have it. I wasn't all the way there, man. So, you know, I struggled with anxiety and depression for a long time. But I think it's valid. So, you know, I never really got addicted to drugs or anything like that. Not even alcohol. That's one of my thing. You know, when I was coming up, I got a job at 12 working at the rec center. And then I think I started cutting grass. And then right around 15, I lied and said I was 16 so I can get a job at Taco Bell. So I got my, you know, I got a driver's permit. I was driving around doing that. So I played basketball. I went to school. My schedule, you know, by the time I got to high school was wake up, you know, go to school, go to basketball practice, 6 o'clock, practice is done. You got to be at work at 6:30. Then I got off work at like 1 o'clock. So I did this for a long time, man. And then at one point, you know, I got a car. My dad was like, I'm tired of paying for your car insurance. You got to figure something out. So you either keep this job you have working. I was bagging. I was a night stalker on base at the grocery store. So I would, you know, get off at go to work at 6:30 and leave at like 12 or whatever. At 16, right? Get off at like 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, wake up and go to school and be there at 9 o'clock and do this every day. I think I did it for a couple of years. And then at one point, I think my senior year, my dad was like, man, you're going to have to pick up more hours or you're going to have to give up driving your car. I don't want to pay both. So I was like, well, you know, as a teenager, you're like, man, I want my car. So I quit playing ball. I was good. You know, my coach was like, man, what's up? I'm like, man, I got to work. And I don't want to give up my car. And so I stopped playing ball. And then eventually I was going to practice and going to practice. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I snuck in there. I think my coach called my parents. I was like, look, man, we need him on the team. We'll do whatever we got to do. But that saved my life. I talk about that all the time, man. And that's why I hold basketball so dear to me, because basketball saved my life. My coach, Joyner, actually, he said, you know what? I was probably a sophomore. You know, I went to school in Little Rock, and it was in Southwest Little Rock. Anybody know Southwest Little Rock back in the 90s? It was crazy, man. I mean, gunshots. We got our bus shot up in the 9th grade. We beat a school called McClellan, Arkansas, man. They shot up our school bus. Matter of fact, after one game we played them, at halftime, we put our stuff on the bus because we were up by 20. And we knew that if we beat them, what was going to happen? So at halftime, we didn't go in the locker room. We went and put our stuff on the bus. And then as soon as the game ended, the buzzer didn't even go off. We were up by 20. Before the buzzer even ended, we took off and ran to the bus. That's how crazy it was growing up, man. That's how crazy it was going to school in Little Rock. Man, so I mean, I think I had valid reason to be as aggressive and act out and do all the things that I did coming up. You know, even into my 20s, man. I mean, I was still kind of a loose cannon. And I remember what really kind of was like, what is wrong with me? I went to college because my dad was like, you guys got to be out of this house at 18. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you get a job. I don't care what you do, but you got to leave my house at 18. So we didn't have no choice. We didn't have no options on what to do. My brother, one of my brothers, I got a bunch of brothers. One of my brother got shot. He had to come live with us. He was in Alabama. He got shot. He had to come live with us. And then one of my cousins got stabbed in the back. I'm sorry, he got stabbed in the chest. And then they left the knife in his chest because if they pulled it out, he would have bled out. And so then, you know, that went down with my brother because my brother was a blood. He used to bang. And I, you know, living in Little Rock, I hung around with a bunch of Crips. So then my brother came and, you know, I can go into so many details, man. But, you know, fast forward, I go to college. I'm 19. I'm in Detroit for spring break. And some dude, I don't even know, points a gun at me, pulls a trigger. I mean, he's standing right in front of me. I don't know him from nobody. I might have been talking to the dude for like 20 minutes, pulls a gun out, puts it in my face, pulls a trigger. And I'm like, what the? And I'm like, yo, what are you doing? Don't put that gun at me. And then he's like, oh, man, whatever. Then he pointed it back at me again. And then he pointed the gun like right to the left. I'm sorry. Yeah, right to the right side of my head, depending on where you're standing. And then he pulls the trigger again and the gun goes off. And I didn't flinch. I didn't move. I didn't have any kind of reaction. I just looked at the guy like I was about to, you know, rip his head off. And then he was just like, oh, snap. And then he freaked out. But I didn't, you know what? That's when I was like, man, something's wrong. But you know what? I think because of all the experiences that I had that I didn't even go into detail. You know, there's way more experiences. But because of all the experiences that I had by that time, I was so cold. I was so callous that I almost got my head shot off. Point blank range. I mean, I could stick my arm out and hit this dude. And I didn't move. I didn't flinch. I didn't have no feeling whatsoever at all. And I'm like, man, something's wrong with me, you know? But again, I didn't care if I lived or I died. You know, my parents would always try to get me to go to church, whatnot. And everybody at my church is like, dude, why are you so lackadaisical? You're so nonchalant. You don't care about this. And I'm like, dude, whatever, man, get out of my face. Just because I'm like, you don't know half the stuff that I've been through. You don't know, you know, why I'm the way I am. You just want to come up here because I don't want to get up here and preach, or I don't want to do, because my brother got into church and stuff like that, but that wasn't me. We had different experiences. And so, you know, they always thought I was just some bad kid or some kind of, I don't know what they thought about me. I just want to play basketball. My coach, you know, my coach saved my life because he came to me, you know, back to that, he came to me my sophomore year. You know, I was going to school in Little Rock because my mom took me out of this school that I was in middle school because I got into it with a kid who hit me in the face for no reason with a deodorant can, the degree can back in the day, the little spray can, for no reason. And so I asked him to apologize and he didn't. And I put my hands on him. And so then I got put on probation for 5 years for whipping his kids behind. And so then my mom took me out of this middle school that I was in because people were getting jumped. I mean, like I said, we got the metal detector with the dogs going to school. It was crazy, man. And so she put me in a private school in Little Rock in the ninth grade. So, I got away from all of my friends that I knew from seventh grade to ninth grade. They were in my neighborhood that I played with when I wasn't in school. So we had to go to another school, and it was like a 2-hour drive from where we live because of traffic. And so then, you know, I was in the ninth grade going to school in Little Rock. Then, you know, that was expensive for my mom because we didn't have it like that. So we only did 1 year, and then she brought us back to public school. So I was back with all the friends that I grew up with, and I played ball. And so I went and tried out, and my coach was like, you know what, man, you're going to be my project. For the next 3 years, you're going to be my project. Because I was real athletic. You know, I had a good basketball IQ. You know, I just had it. I didn't start playing ball until like probably like 2 years prior to that. But I needed something to do, and that was my outlet. So I would go to the park by myself. I would go to the gym by myself. I would spend hours and hours and hours. I mean, wake up at 8 and come back home at like 9 o'clock. I would go to Burger King and get food and then go back to the gym. And so he was like, you know what? You're my project, man. I'm gonna see what I can do for you for the next 3 years. And so him taking me under his wing like that, that saved my life because I was already headed down the wrong path. But again, I think it's warranted. Just based on what I went through. So I had real bad anxiety and depression because of all of this stuff. So through my 20s, man, I was just with it. I was with it all the time. Even though, you know, people that met me, they seemed I was real calm, but like I was a firecracker. You know, my cousin gave me that nickname. Like I would pop off real fast, especially if he was a guy because of the relationship I had with my dad. You know, so my respect for men was like super short. I was like, man, you don't, I didn't have the right role models for that. So I grew up, it was my grandmother. My grandfather was cool, but like I said, I told you what happened to him. So it's just my grandmother, and my mom tried to show love too, but you know, there was a point in my time, and there's a point in my life where I didn't know who my mother was. I didn't know if it was my grandmother or my mother. So my mom would drop us off periodically because she had to go do basic training and all kind of other military things. So I grew up in a house in the middle of the hood, tin roof. Like, we had to put buckets everywhere. It was literally made of tin. And it was built by my uncle and my grandfather by their bare hands. And so you could see the, you know, the ground looking through the floor. We, you know, it was really that bad. So it was like two of us in this shack. Not two of us. It was five or six of us in this two-bedroom shack. I slept in the bed with my grandmother. And then my uncle slept on the other side of the house with one of my other cousins. He got kicked out of his house because he had issues with his dad. And then my brother. So this is just the environment that I grew up in. So it's like, I just had a lot of respect for my grandmother and my mom, you know what I mean? Because, you know, again, I didn't know who was who, but I know my mom would come back and pick me up. And then I know, remember one time she came back to get me and I didn't know who she was. And I was like, well, I was asking my grandmother, why are you sending me off with this random lady? And she's like, nah, that's your mom. I'm like, nah, you're my mom. And she's like, no, that's your mom. I'm like, nah, you're my mom. Because everybody in the house called her mom. You know, obviously my uncle was there. That's his mom. And then my aunt would come over. They would call her mom. So everybody called her mom. So I thought she was my mom too. This is how screwed up I was. And so, you know, I'm crying because my grandmother is trying to push me off with some random lady. And then my mom was like, you know what? I'm never going to leave you guys again. Like, she took me to get some candy from a candy store. And I was like, this lady might not be that bad. And so after that, she never left us again. She had to take me back to my grandmother's house one more time when I was 15. And that's something that I'm just not going to talk about. So I had to go back one more time for summertime. And then I came back and then I didn't go back to my grandmother's house until probably in my 20s because something else happened when I left college and moved to Florida. But that's what I mean. So I'm just saying, like, I think, you know, these are just a couple experiences that I had. And I'm just a kid. So what do you think my perception of reality is? What do you think my life is going to be shaped after? So it makes sense for me to be the person that I was. It made sense for me to be so violent and so angry or however I was. You know what I mean? On the outside, I was cool. Everybody's like, man, Dre's super laid back, but don't piss that dude off or don't make him mad. Or like, I was always isolated. I was always by myself. You know what I mean? Just because I knew I couldn't do no harm to myself. I knew, you know, as long as I'm by myself, I'm good. And, you know, I talked about my friends, you know, when I was younger, and it seemed like up until I was like 8 or 9, everyone that I got close to died. And so I was so scared to get close to people because I was like, you know what, if I get close to this person, they're going to die, because that's just what I was so used to. And then I was like, you know, if I get close to this person, they're going to leave, because I remember being close to my mom at some point in time. And then she would take me and drop me off. Then I got cool with my grandmother and my cousins. And then I would go back to my mom, and then they were military. So we would just move around. So I really had this huge disconnect with people just because I never had a stretch with anyone. And then the people that I had a stretch with, they end up dying. So I was always by myself, and I'm comfortable. Even to this day, I'm like that now. I'll hang out and I'll kick it with people, but I can only do it to a certain point. Even though I'm over all my issues, I just find comfort in being by myself, because that's what I know and that's what I did. Because again, I just felt like anybody that I got cool with, they were going to be gone, whether it be through death or just I'm going to be up and gone. So for years and years, I moved. Even when I was an adult, I would just move across the street from where I was living just because I was so accustomed to just moving and going places all the time. I couldn't sit still as an adult. You know, even living in Florida, like I said, I had an apartment. I moved like 2 blocks down to another apartment. I might have been there for like 1.5 or 2 years. Then I moved somewhere else. And then eventually at one point I stayed in one place. Probably when I moved to LA, I stayed in one place for 5 years. That was the longest I ever stayed in one location at one time. And I was always on the move. So I think me and my demons that I struggle with, even to this day, I just have the tools and resources to be able to control the issues that I have from my childhood, you know? So anxiety and depression, man, there's a certain amount of interaction that people need with other people. There's a certain amount of connectivity and touch that a person physically needs. I know this because I at one point in time, I had a bad experience in LA. And I'll get to that in a second. And so I had to go to therapy for months and months. And then I went and did NLP. So I know how neurology works. So I know what I'm saying is people need a certain amount of touch from another human being to keep their sanity. And that's why I knew that when 2020 hit, when we went in quarantine, that the suicide rate was going to go up, that domestic abuse was going to go up, that violence was going to, all of these things, I just knew that were going to happen. Because when you start isolating people and they're not able to physically touch people, they're not able to have sex, they're not able to do all these things, then your mental breaks down. I mean, that's just how it is. So by human nature, what is going on right now was going to happen because of the pandemic. If people didn't get on medication or people don't want to talk about these things that I'm talking about, they need to be talked about. Because what the government did by locking us down for that amount of time, they not only destroyed the economy, but they really, really killed people's mental health. I don't even know, man. I mean, I don't know. The scarring from what the government did goes so much deeper than the economy. It's crazy, man. So that's what I mean. So today I really want to address that, right? I mean, anxiety and depression. If you don't know how to do it without medication, then you need medication. And I noticed it because, again, I mean, at one point in time, again, you know, I'm going to fast forward to my 30s. This was a couple years ago in my early 30s. I had a job and I was super stressed out. I had a kid that had to take care of me and his mom didn't work out. And man, it was rough in the beginning. I remember at one point I tore my Achilles and I couldn't walk. And I had my son might have been like 6 months old at the time. And she wanted to be with me and it wasn't working because of, you know, whatever was going on between me and her. So she would not bring me my kid. We're in a better place now. We're cool now, but she wouldn't bring me my kid. So me with a torn Achilles, I would have to get on crutches, and it was my driving foot. I would have to get on crutches and figure out how to get in my car and drive to go see my son. And then when I got there to see my son, she would leave. So here I'm trying to carry this baby and with crutches, or she would just leave him on the couch. You know what I mean? So I was like, what in the world? I remember one time she brought me groceries and she just left them at the door. Left them at the door, like 4 or 5 bags of groceries. I'm on crutches. How am I going to get the food? I mean, I was happy she brought me the groceries, but I think she walked in and seen something misplaced. Who knows what it was, but it was misplaced and she just got mad about it and just left the groceries right there. And I'm like, what? So yeah, I mean, trying to hobble over and get groceries and put it in the fridge, man, it was crazy, man. So just, you know, different things like that, they just start to compound over life. So if you start going through certain things at like 5 or 6 years old, and then you hit your 30s and you're still going through a lot of different things, man, again, it just makes sense for people to have breaking points. And I don't think people understand, like, these people that are out here shooting up schools or doing these mass killings, there are clear warning signs. If anyone knows these people, they know they have a problem. It's so obvious. And I know this because, again, I studied this stuff. I had to learn for myself. So this stigma around mental health, people should be okay with it. I mean, because if you see someone, they're in a bad place, they're not leaving their house, they're playing, you know, I don't want to say playing video games all day, but they're not having any human interaction, they're not seeing them with a girl. There's a lot of things that you can see that are warning signs, but people have this bad stigma about mental health and they don't want to address it. They don't want to talk about it. They just want to let this person be in their world. And when you do stuff like that, that person is probably crying out for help. You know what I mean? They don't know how to communicate that. People have communication issues. I mean, I didn't know there's something that's called, I forgot what it's called. My therapist back then told me I was a walking, not depressant or whatever it was, because I live with depression. Like, I functioned with it. I was a functioning something, she called me. I can't remember it exactly, but I functioned. I went to work like this. I did this every day. So there's people that have these issues. And anyone that knows me, I always play basketball. I would go to the gym all the time. When I hit my lowest moment, when I was going through it because I had a job and I was so stressed out at this job, and I was doing it because I was trying to get more money, and I was killing myself with this job. And then I was trying to build InvestFAR at the same time. And then I'm raising my son by myself. And I just hit a breaking point. And so I was playing ball in different leagues. And if anyone knew me and they paid attention to my patterns, like I understand a lot of people, so I pay attention to the patterns. If they knew mine, they didn't see me going to the gym anymore. I wasn't playing any more basketball leagues. I stopped taking my son to the park, which is right across the street from where I was living. I didn't do any of these things. I would pick my son up from school. I had a bad attitude with him. He didn't do anything wrong, but I was just on edge. My anxiety was through the roof. I was depressed. I would come in here. I would just give him some food and just be like, good, man, here, watch TV, play video games or whatever. I didn't care what he did. I wasn't like that before. I was like, whatever. I would just give him his food, turn the TV on, give him the video game stick and go to sleep. I would wake up, set my alarm to wake up when it was like time for him to go take a shower, put him in the tub, brush his teeth and put him back in the bed. And then I would just go back and sit on the couch and just veg out. I didn't do anything, man. And so like, if anyone knew me and I went missing, I wasn't talking to any of my friends. People would hit me up and they couldn't find me. I wasn't answering the phone. So if you got someone that you're dealing with, who there's certain signs, like if their patterns start to abnormally just become erratic or they just disappear, I mean, you might want to check on them. You might want to see what's going on with them because it's something's going on. And so if somebody would have checked on me, they would have knew something was up. You know what I mean? And that wasn't my first time, man. I guess at 15, I tried to commit suicide. And then in my early 20s, man, I was struggling real hard economically and I was just going through so much. I mean, I called my mom. I was like, yo, look, I got something to take care of. If you don't hear from me tomorrow, just know I love you. And I was like, you got another son, so you'll be all right. And she was like, that's so selfish. That's so selfish of you to feel like that. And I was like, it is what it is, man. And I just hung up. And then luckily I made it back home. You know, luckily, I made it back. But, you know, at that point in time, I didn't care if I lived or I died. Like, it was like that for me. I really didn't care. You know what I mean? It was whatever. So, you know, I still had that. I still had that, you know, past going through late 20s, even into my early 30s. It was like a still or whatever attitude. But it wasn't until I went to take my son to school one day and I was about to have a heart attack. My left arm started tingling. I started sweating really bad. I started hyperventilating and I just put my son in the car real quick. And then I turned on the AC and it just started blowing in my face. And I just sat there for a minute, like, what is going on? So I was like, you know, I'm calling in because I've never experienced anything like that. I was like, I'm probably having a heart attack. So I dropped my son off at the daycare, came back, called my doctor, called my boss and said, I'm not coming in to work today. I got to go to the doctor. Went to the doctor. They were like, dude, you need to stop working right now or you're going to die. And I'm like, what in the world? She's like, yeah, man. So, you know, my lab work was all jacked up. I was in a bad place, man. So they took me off work for my own. Because I would have never did that, man. I'm a hard worker. Like, I'm always on it. I don't never stop. Even now, I keep going. You know what I mean? It'll take. Nobody's going to outwork me. You might work as hard as me, but you're not going to outwork me. And anybody that knows me that knows that. So it was like for me to, I had to be told to stop doing what I was doing. Or I was going to die. So that's what happened for me. And so through that experience, I had to go. I had to basically check myself in and go to therapy, intense therapy, man, for like 6 months, 3 or 4 days a week, five hours a day, individual sessions. I needed it, man. And so, you know, bringing that up to say I was functioning. You know, I was snapping on my people that I was with in relationships. I was snapping on my kid. I was snapping on everybody. And I didn't know this. I didn't know I had an issue. I thought I was perfectly fine, you know, because I seen my dad be a certain way. And I thought that was just who I was, you know what I mean? Just because of my experiences. But then when I went and really got help, I realized like, man, I got issues. You know what I mean? I'm suffering from a disease. This is not my fault. I mean, I just didn't have the tools. You know, at one point in my early 20s, because I had another job that I had, I had to go to see a therapist. They wouldn't let me come back to work because of some situation that I had in my job with another person. They're like, yo, you can't come back to work until you go to at least 5 sessions. And so I had to go. You know, they gave me the okay to go back to work and at that point in time. And I still, man, I still didn't get it. And it wasn't until that experience that I just said that made me be like, man, I got a problem. I didn't know until I started going through therapy that I had an issue that I was suffering from. Anxiety and depression and my it's a chemical imbalance, right? People don't just do the things that they do and act the way that they do. I had a chemical imbalance because my body wasn't producing a certain level of serotonin, which is what's in people's body that keeps them from doing crazy shit. You know what I mean? So I didn't know any of this. And so they gave me medication, but I'm like, I'm taking that. So there was other things that they can tell me that I could do to, you know, start working in different tools that I had at my disposal to correct this. You know what I mean? So there's so many exercises that I had to do. You know, I got back in the gym because I wasn't working every day. There were so many things that I had to do with my diet, my water. I didn't sleep. All these things were like, my, you know, attacking me. And at the same time, I'm still grinding, trying to build the mobile app that I have now. I'm just still trying to get it, man, because, you know, my early 20s, I did entertainment. I was a model. I was on billboards. I was on commercials. I had all this stuff. I didn't really have a job. So me going through the struggles that I had, I did hit a good point in my 20s where I was doing modeling full time. You know what I mean? So I probably still had my issues back then, but I didn't have certain triggers because I was, you know, I was working out every day. I was eating really good. I was around people. I was playing in different semi-pro leagues. So I had the activity that I needed to keep my sanity. You know what I mean? And then when I moved to California, things got a little bit different for me. And so then I guess those triggers came back that I didn't know that I had. And so then it just went downhill from there. I'm thankful that that happened to me. Right. I don't think any of the things that happened to me in the past, I'm grateful for all of them. Right. I'm happy because anything past that, I'm good. I'm doing fine. Like I said before, like people that come from poverty or these situations, you can't go nowhere but back to that. Right. And then if you got from there, you know how to get back. And so that's what I'm cool. I'm happy that I went through all of that stuff in the beginning. And clearly, you guys, if you listen to my previous episodes, you know where I'm at right now. And so I think people need to talk about this. I think this should come up, man. It's not like people are out here, you know, people that are homeless or on the street, that's something on a greater level. I think more funding needs to go into these mental awareness, mental health. Like, I don't think people should have this bad stigma behind this. I mean, because people can change. Clearly, I told you guys some of the stuff that I went through and where I'm at right now, and there's stuff that I keep doing. So that's why with both books that I've written, I talk about a lot of these things in there. I mean, because if I can come from the past that I've came from and I'm where I'm at, I still suffer from this. Even, you know, you might have heard me on my last podcast say, like, I did a podcast at 2 or 3 in the morning because some of these things that I got going on with the mobile app and just in my life in general, it brought up these same feelings that I had from previous. And so I probably slept 16 hours in a whole week. The week that I did that podcast that I was up till 2 or 3 in the morning, I probably slept, like I said, 16 hours for that whole week. You know what I mean? And it was there. So there's just certain things. But what people got to understand that are suffering from anxiety and depression, it'll pass. It's just a wave. It comes in waves. And it's, you just, at some point, you're going to have to figure out how to get the tools to be able to weather that wave whenever it comes, whenever it hits you. So, you know what I mean? If it wasn't like last week, I was, you know, having an anxiety attack. It was a real bad one, right? You know, so again, I'm still doing what I'm doing and I am successful. I mean, I don't have distress from a job or anything. I just got a regular life. I mean, you guys hear me. I go to Columbia. I travel. I do this. But I know Hall of Famers. I don't want to mention names. I know people that are in Hollywood. I know so many people that suffer from all of this stuff. I mean, I've had conversations. I've seen it. I've witnessed it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it don't matter the level of success that you have. Everyone still got their thing, man. People got demons. People got things that they went through. Some people might have worse stuff than I have, but I think people that have these anxiety or that are suffering with depression, man, they probably got a valid reason. But the thing about it is, like, you can't be afraid to talk about it. You can't be afraid to go seek help. You can't be like, oh man, I'm a crazy person because I got to go see a psychiatrist. Like, for me, I'm cool with talking about it because I think people need to hear it. I think people need to know, like, just because I'm going through this now don't mean I'm going to go through it forever. But the benefit of me going through what I went through is because I think you go through things to share with other people. You know what I mean? I don't think I went through all of the stuff that I did in my lifetime for no reason. And that's why I don't take it a certain way. I try to use the things that I did and I reframe it. I talk a lot about that because me going through NLP, me going through the therapy has opened my eyes to being like, you know what? These experiences for me to do this podcast right now, for it to be able to help somebody, regardless of where they are, it's like people suffering from anxiety and depression all over the world. So it don't matter where anybody is listening to this right now. I mean, don't be afraid to go check yourself in. You know what I mean? I mean, I left. I got out. And I thought I was good. I was out for like a month. And I went back. I had to go back. You know what I mean? And the second time I went back from that time, I've been good. You know what I mean? It helped me out a lot, even relationships. You know what I mean? I was in a relationship for a long time with somebody. And she tried to commit suicide and put it on me. And that was a couple years ago. And if I hadn't gone through the therapy, because me and this person was off and on for a long time. And if it wasn't for the stuff that I learned. I mean, when you're in a bad relationship, man, that could cause you depression. That could cause you anxiety. If you don't want to go home, or you don't want to answer the phone, or you don't want to do all these things, man, like, that's not a good relationship for you to be in, right? So if it wasn't for me getting the tools that I did from going to therapy, I would have probably fell back into that trap or felt obligated. But I'm like, man, if this girl would have died, man, it wouldn't have been on me. You know, it couldn't have been on me. You know what I'm saying? But like, that hit me hard because, again, this is someone that I cared about, who I was with for a while. She, you know, she had a whole lot to lose. And, you know what I mean? For her to take her life and put it on me, man, that messed with me for a little bit. So, I mean, again, like, just stuff just compounds and compounds. And so if it wasn't for me going and checking myself in, or not because I wanted to, but because I had no choice, I wouldn't have had the tools to be able to navigate that situation and get out. And, you know, luckily she made it and she's good. And she's fine. I, matter of fact, I told her to go. You know, after she did that, whatnot, you know, I was like, yo, you gotta go see somebody. So I recommended the same, you know, place that I went to her, because, you know, she's a better person. So don't feel like you can't go and see somebody, man. I think you should, because you'll get the tools and the resources you need to be able to navigate life. You know what I mean? So like, from that, going through that, man, the likelihood of me getting upset is super slim, man. It's got to be a lot. It's got to be a lot to take me there, because I don't go there, you know, because back then when I did, it was a wrap. But now it takes a lot for me to get upset. You know what I mean? So like I said, when I had my session last weekend, it lasted for like a week, man. Something just snapped me out of it, man. Meditating and doing things like that helped me out, but I wasn't doing it for a while because, again, the pandemic hit everybody a certain way, and me not being able to travel and move around, that's something that I love to do. And so when the pandemic hit, in the beginning of it, I mean, I was coming off the situation with my ex, which was a mind fuck, right? For someone to put that on you like that, you know, it's like, man, I didn't agree to take a life. You know what I mean? This ain't got to do with me. So you, that's like, what? So then the pandemic hit, and I felt myself again feeling that sensation that I had. And so that's the reason I wrote two books. That's the reason why I started another company. Like, I had to do so many things. That's why I'm so active with business. And because I'm like, man, the way to keep your mind from slipping into all of these negative things or these triggers, you got to watch the stuff that you watch on TV. You got to listen. You got to watch the music you put into your body. You got to watch what you're doing, man. Out of time gets the man in trouble. So for me, I got to stay productive. I got to keep moving, just because for me, that's helpful. So like, that's kind of why I did half the stuff that I did in 2020, because for me, it kept me out of, you know, falling into, you know, a place that I don't want to be in again. And like I said, when it hit me last week, I knew I had the tools, I had the resources. So I knew what to do to not stay in that place long. I think I was in that place for about 2 weeks. And then I was watching The Boy from Medellin. J Balvin suffered from something similar. I think that's a great documentary, man. You know, not to get sidetracked, but I think that's a great documentary. You should check it out. But he suffered from something similar. And watching him, he said something about what he does in the movie that refocuses him. That's what I did. And then boom, it got me out of it, because I just forgot, like, you know, me meditating and doing all the extra things that I got to do, it always snatched me out of it. And so, man, it kicked me out of it. And man, am I thankful. So back to being super duper high productive, not complaining, not stressing out about the stuff that was stressing me out, which it should have been. You know, the stuff that I'm going through right now, it could be stressful. You know what I mean? But again, since I got the tools that I, from the therapy, I mean, it's rare that I get stressed out about anything. It's rare that I get mad. It's rare that any of these things that I mentioned to you have an effect on me. And I'm super thankful. Even relationships, you know what I mean? I know when to exit. I know when to not stay somewhere too long. I know when to do all of these different things, because I went and got help. So I don't think people should be like, man, I got these problems, man. I got this stuff going on, and people that are successful don't have these problems. Man, please. I don't know nobody that has money, or that's super rich, or that's a Hall of Famer, or whatever their case is, who is too big for this. You know what I mean? There's no one. Nobody wishes it on nobody else. You know what I mean? Nobody wants anybody thinking about taking their own life. Yeah, right. The amount of success you have, it has nothing to do with any of that stuff, man. Because most of the people that got to this level of where they got to, there was a grind that you had to go through, man. People see the glory, but they don't know the story. You know what I mean? They don't know the half. Like, nobody knows the half of what I went through to get where I'm at, and or what I go through right now, or anybody else. I mean, I know a bunch of people's story, and it's like, so, you know, you can't be judging people based on the lifestyle that they have now, because you just never know what they went through, you know, and you don't know what they're going through right now. And so I'm real private, man. The stuff that I'm talking to you guys about right now, man, not too many people know about this. I mean, it's, like I said, I put some stuff in the book, but I just felt like sharing this information with you guys, because I think it's real, real bad right now, man. I'm in LA and it's super bad out here. I was watching something on TV on the news this morning where a lot of people, man, they're talking about the suicide rate going up, and it's really bad in LA. And it makes sense because LA is one of the largest cities and it has the most homeless people. I mean, the struggle here is real economically. Things are going up. People can't get jobs. So it makes sense for people to be stressed out here and trying to get on drugs, and the government's not really taking care of people out here like they should. And so, man, I don't know, man. I think you guys, if you got problems, man, if you listening to this and you suffering from anxiety or depression or all these things, don't be afraid, man, to tell somebody. Or don't be afraid to check in, man. And it's funny because I remember when I was going through my thing, I shared it with one of my good friends, and maybe a month or two later, you know, he was open enough to tell me, man. He hit me up. He was crying, man. I think I'm depressed because he was going through a divorce and he had his own stuff going on. And she was getting this, man. She was taking him for a lot of stuff. And it was affecting a lot of different things for him and myself because we were, you know, doing business together. So I don't want you guys to think it's not something that you can talk about, man. And I don't want you guys to think it's something that you can't get past. You don't need to have to go out here and try to kill yourself. You know what I mean? For me, having anxiety and depression to me has been a gift and a curse at the same time. I think now, like, I reframe everything. And so people don't like to talk about death, but I've always been a person to not be afraid of that. I think I was afraid of it maybe in super young, man, maybe like 5 or 6, maybe. But after a while, it was just like, whatever. So for me, one of my boys was like, two weeks ago, he's like, bro, you always get it done. Anyone that knows me, they know they can hit me up if they need something. I'm going to get done within 10 minutes. I get stuff done. And I wrote one book in 30 days. I wrote the other book probably like, I don't know, 45 days. You know what I mean? I created a company that's doing $1 million in probably 4 months. So it's like, I just go and I just get it done, because for me, I always feel like that tomorrow's my last day. So when you live like tomorrow's your last day, I don't know if that's a shitty way to live, but I mean, you're going to be super productive, because I think for me, you know, my biggest fear is leaving this world without giving my gift. I think everybody has a gift that they're given to give to society. And it's unfortunate that people do leave here without giving people their gift. So I think for me, that's what my biggest fear is. My biggest fear is leaving here and not giving what I'm supposed to give. And so that's why I always live like tomorrow's it for me. I don't do anything. I live my life like, man, this is it. Because it could be. I mean, I've seen death so much. I know that it could go like that. I mean, I almost died 3 times by the time I was 19. You know what I mean? And then probably once again in my 20s. So I think when you look at life through that lens, it makes you super productive. Some people might say it sucks to think like that, but people don't like to talk about death. But I think if you live your life like you're not going to be here tomorrow, because you don't know. You don't know when your time is going to expire. And you out here living life and kicking it and drinking and going out of there and doing all these crazy things. I mean, I get it. That's cool to do. But what if, you know what I mean? What if I got these two books inside of me and I didn't get a chance to get them done? I mean, they're in the production now, but what if I got this mobile app that's going to change, you know, and bridge inequality for people? What if I got all these different things in me that I didn't get out because I didn't take my life serious? So I think the benefit of living like tomorrow's it, you would be way more productive, man, because that's the truth. You never know when your time is up. Everybody's going to die one day. You know what I mean? You don't know what your date is. You don't know what time it is. You don't know nothing. So I think it's just arrogant for people to just go out here and feel like they got all the time in the world. They're going to think they're going to live to see 90 or 100 or 85 or whatever. You know what I mean? Because you don't know. So I think if you approach life with that thought process, and I'm not sitting here saying I'm negative Nancy, like I'm sitting here. I mean, cool. If I live to be 85 or 90, my goal is to live to be 100. I'm trying to figure that out, right? I'm eating right. I'm doing whatever. I'm trying to get a ranch in Colombia, in the middle of nowhere, where, you know, where my stress level is low, I'm growing my own food. So there's things that I'm doing to try to live as long as I can, but I still live my life like it could be it tomorrow, because again, you never know. So I'm not telling you guys to approach your life like that. You could be like, man, that's morbid, or that's a hard way to live, but it's not, man. I mean, I got goals. I got a vision board. I got my son. I mean, I got a lot of things that I look forward to. It's just that my intentionality with time is insane. So, and that's why when people hit me up, I get them the answer. I get whatever I can right then, because I don't want to say I'm going to get it to you tomorrow. Because what if I don't get it to them tomorrow? What if they needed what I had to give them that day and I couldn't give it to them? What if I didn't? What if I hopped out here and went somewhere and they were like, dang, I needed that? You know, I don't think it's a bad way to live. I use my time intentionally. You know what I mean? And I always say this, if you go to my Instagram page, my subject line is, time is non-refundable. Use it with intention. You ain't going back to 25. You ain't going back to 18. You ain't getting no younger, right? So you don't have time to waste. And so again, I think the experience that I had shaped who I am today, and it gives me the intentionality that I have with time and how I focus. So even when I'm down with anxiety and it's attacking me really bad, or if I'm struggling with depression, I'm still trying to do one thing a day. The only thing that I could do, or any of us can do, is try to be better every single day. Every day I try to be a better version of myself so I can be a better example to my son and other people, right? So I think that's the only thing that anybody can go out there and do, is be a better version of yourself and do one thing a day toward whatever that goal is. I think if you don't have a purpose in life, and I was fortunate enough to find mine early on because of the experience that I had growing up in the environments that I did, I understand what my purpose is, right? I understand what I'm here to do. And so that's what I'm trying to do. So I think once people figure out what their purpose is in life, then the rest of what you're trying to do in your experiences is going to be super easy for you. If I didn't feel like I knew what I had to do at 15, I probably still wouldn't be alive. You know what I mean? But if it wasn't for me knowing back then what my purpose is, I'll be gone. I know that for sure. I didn't live to think I'd see 18. Matter of fact, I didn't even have a graduation party. I turned 17. I graduated at 17. The night I graduated, even my parents, the night I graduated, we went to a couple people at the house. I mean, from my church, we went to their house, hung out for a little bit. And the next day we moved and got on the road to Chicago. So I didn't even kick it. I didn't have a graduation party or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? So I think my parents knew. I mean, my mom knew who I was. Clearly she knew who I was. So, you know what I mean? And when I hit 18, I was like, oh man, I pray to God I see 25. So again, for me to live with intentionality the way I do is because I think I'm living on time that I didn't even think I was going to have. I didn't think I would see, you know, past 25, and I did, and I had a kid. So for me, again, like I said, when you come from the bottom like that, your level of thinking is just so completely different. So that's why I think people that got these issues, once you learn how to navigate through your anxiety, your depression, or whatever you're battling with, you're going to be the same way, right? You use it as a tool, and it's just gas, right? It's just gas for me, because now I'm like, man, I'm out here winning. I'm a decade plus past where I should have been. You know what I mean? So to me, I'm like, man, it's just a cherry on top. So that's why I kind of live life. And like right now, my life don't suck. I always say that my life don't suck. I can go somewhere right now and just chill and retire. But for what? What is that going to do for other people that are struggling just like I am? What is that going to do for all the knowledge that I attain, all the experience that I had? Why not give that to somebody else, whether it be for free? I was going to give away my books for free, but people were like, nah, what are you doing? Don't give your books away for free, but that's just the person that I am. You know what I mean? So I'm not doing it, because people are like, no, you can't do that. So, I mean, I think anyone that does buy my book, whenever it comes out, both of them, I think there is some stuff that's in there that will change your life, because I put down a lot of experiences that got me from where I was to where I am right now. And I outline it. I outline it in both the books. And so that's why I think they're very impactful, even from a mindset point of view. The whole beginning of the book, first two chapters, is about changing people's mindsets, because a lot of people would think that someone like me shouldn't be where I am. And it's actually the exact opposite of that. I am where I am because of what I went through. And other people out here, like I said, went through worse things than me, I'm sure. And, you know, they could do the same, if not greater things than I'm doing. So, man, don't be afraid to talk about your depression and anxiety or whatever you got going on, man. Like, it's real out here, man. I don't want to talk about the statistics because I don't know all of them, you know what I mean? But I know how bad it is in LA. And I can only imagine other parts of the world. I can only imagine in third world countries, man, and people, places like Lebanon, and you know, it's probably bad, man. So, man, guys, go out here, man. If you listening to this and you know somebody who's struggling, or if you see somebody's pattern that's changed, or they're doing different things that they're not used to doing, man, talk to them, sit them down, give them a hug. Whatever the case is, man, don't leave somebody hanging, man. Don't leave them struggling. Don't be afraid to be like, man, I don't want to talk about this because I don't know. Nah, man, bring it up, man. Talk about suicide, talk about death, talk about all that stuff, because again, it's good to talk about it and it's therapeutic. And that person needs that. That person wants that. The girl that I was with, my ex, she fought me hard about going, talking about, I don't need this, I don't need this, I don't need this. And she went, and she, her life has changed because of that. So if you got to be on somebody, you got to force somebody to go, I think you got to do it. And I think even for yourself, I think you should do it too, because I guarantee you on the other side of that, you're going to be happy that you did it. So I hope you guys take my story and get motivated by it. I mean, if you didn't have the same experience that I had and you had something else that may have triggered you to make you go down a wrong path, it don't got to be this story is similar to mine. It don't got to be as, you know, traumatic or dramatic or whatever you want to call it. It don't have to be that. It could be whatever. You know, everybody's threshold is different. You could have went through, you know, your dad being on drugs or your mom being, you know, whatever, man. Like, who knows, right? Whatever your issue is that made you or that triggers you or whatever, right? So whatever your trigger is, whatever your issue is, man, feel free to go out here and get checked. Call, Google, a hotline, whatever, man. There's tools out here in every city. You just got to know what to look for. And if you got to Google something to pull up a hotline or a number to call, you pull it up. You know what I mean? All of this stuff ties in with you being successful and you going out here and being the person you want to. If you listening to this because you want to get into investing, right? All the stuff that I went through, I had to go through that to get to where I am. I had to go get these additional tools to get to where I am as well. And so you got to have the mental capacity to be a good investor, right? You can't be having these mental breakdowns or the bouts of depression or anxiety attacks when it's time for a deal or pulling the trigger on certain stocks or selling stuff too fast. So, I mean, if you want to get into investing, you want to be a good investor, you need to go out there and get some of these things you have fixed, because you don't want to be an emotional investor. I don't do anything based on emotion, not at all. And people be like, that's wrong. No, you got to invest with logic. You got to live your life with logic. Like, if you know a relationship's not working, you can't stay in it because you're emotional, right? They're going to end up killing each other, or who wants to live today 25 or 30 in a shitty relationship, right? That's going to ruin the rest of your life. It's going to make you unproductive. I'm not doing that. I don't give a damn how long we've been together, but I'm not going to be in a relationship for 25 years with someone we can't sleep in the same room, right? You only got one life to live, so you need to live it to the fullest. And you can't do that half-assed in life because you're in a mediocre relationship or whatever the case is. I mean, at the end of the day, if you got kids, who's going to take care of your kids? If you're not healthy, man, that's one of the things that I thought about. Like, look, I'm not going to let another man raise my kid while I'm still on this earth, right? And I think people should think about that kind of stuff when it comes to their kids. It's like, I gave my son's mom an ultimatum. Like, look, you either get this together and we stop arguing and doing all these different things when this boy is here, or we done. And I drew the line in the sand. And that last time that happened, I was good. I was done. And so you got to be able to do that. You got to have that in you, right? There's inherent sacrifices that you have to make in this lifetime, especially if you're dealing with mental health issues and the person in your environment or different people in your environment aren't healthy for you. That's just how it is, you know? So it is what it is, man. And like I said, I'm good with everyone that I mentioned this. I'm good with everybody that I talked about at this point in my life, right? I'm good with so many people. And it was because of, you know, me going and getting healed, me being able to have these conversations with these folks later in life. And so now, again, I challenge you guys to go out there and do this. I challenge you guys to have these conversations with anybody you know that has certain things going on in their life. So I thank you guys for listening, man. And I hope this is helpful. Again, man, don't be afraid to go out there and do what you got to do to make sure your life goes in order as planned. Take care, guys. And I'll see you on the next episode.